Since 1931, Financial Executives International has been the leading advocate for the views of corporate financial management. Its more than 10,000 members hold policymaking positions as chief financial officers, chief accounting officers, controllers, and treasurers at companies from every major industry. And FEI enhances its members' professional development through peer networking, career management services, conferences, research, and publications. Join FEI today to network with key influencers, understand emerging issues, advocate for corporate finance, and boost your career opportunities. Both individual and corporate membership options are available. Go to www.financialexecutives.org and click on Become a Member. Or look for the link in this episode's show notes.
Hi, this is Chris Westfall, and this is the FEI Weekly Podcast. With the announcement of the Securities Exchange Commission's final rule on carbon disclosure, financial executives and markets have gotten something they continually crave, certainty. But with a lot of post-rule discourse built around the SEC's limiting of carbon disclosure, especially around Scope 3, there is some anticipation that the ESG talent bubble and finance accounting will begin to burst. In this episode of the podcast, we speak with Catherine Harris, Director of U.S. Sustainable Business at Executive Recruiter Aker, about the prospects for ESG finance and accounting specialists post the SEC rule, and how the line between sustainability and traditional financial reporting may be merging. Well, Ms. Harris, thanks for joining us today. Interesting conversation we're going to have. There's so much going on in terms of sustainability, both on a regulatory perspective, but also from a business perspective. But I always like to begin with a little bit. Maybe you can describe a little bit about yourself and your background and your work at Aker.
Sure, I'm happy to. And thank you. It's lovely to meet you, and I'm excited about this chat. So I, as you can tell from my accent, I'm from the UK, and I've been with Aker for just over 11 years. Aker as a business is a sustainability recruiter and an exec search firm. So we're very much specialists in all things ESG and sustainability. And that means that we work with everything from sustainable finance, sort of private equity firms and investors and impact investors and that sort of thing, to climate tech companies, large and small, and those that are at the sort of cutting edge of what's going on at the moment around carbon and carbon capture and that sort of thing. And then we also work with corporates, businesses that are looking to hire usually senior execs and non-execs and advisors, but sometimes we'll also be asked to find subject matter experts as well at a more junior end of the spectrum. And so those are the sort of the three areas of sort of that we focus on: finance, climate tech, and then sustainable business, which is my space. And you know, I'll work with brands like Crocs or Samsonite or Lululemon in Canada, and Tiffany, Chewy is another private equity-owned business that we've worked with. And in almost all cases, these are sort of chief sustainability officers or VPs of sustainability, oftentimes brand new hires as well for the businesses. And as I mentioned, we do sometimes work on advisory board searches where a very large company might be looking for specific advice around human rights or transport and emissions and that sort of thing. You know, we'll work with mining, metals companies, work in the built environment, construction. So that's sort of the focus area for us as a business. And we've got, I suppose, our head office is in the UK, and that's where we first began about 20 plus years ago. And then I came over here 5 years ago to set up our US office, and there were just two of us at the time. And now there's about 15, I think, at the last count. So, yeah, that's maybe some reflection of what's going on. And we've got offices in Singapore and the Netherlands too. So hopefully that gives you a good sort of sense of who we are and what we do. And I did my master's in sustainability in 2000. So my goodness, 24 years ago, when it wasn't really even a thing. So it's something I've been passionate about for quite a long time.
Yeah, and certainly you'll have the perspective of you know, looking at the growth of sustainability over the you know, several years. And that's what I want to sort of start off with, is sort of like, you know, I can't quite tell where we are in this process, and there's a big debate about you know, where sustainability is going and adoption. But, you know, given your experience, what has been the trajectory of recruitment patterns in ESG, especially on the finance and financial reporting side?
It's a great question. I mean, I think on the one hand, the reporting piece has always been around in one form or another. I think historically, it's probably been contained in its own ESG sustainability report, which, you know, some of the bolder companies have been coming out with for quite some time. It takes a lot to even produce a report, of course, because then you're going public with your claims or your targets. But definitely in more recent years, we're seeing a move to integrated reporting, and where there's a move to working more closely with finance and with the broader business to ensure that the commercial strategy is aligned with the sustainability targets as well. And that's where, you know, we'll see more roles that are integrating the reporting with the wider functions. But it also depends a lot on the business that you're thinking about or talking about. So a heavy emitting business versus a service provider, like a law firm. Some businesses are B2B versus B2C, so they care a bit less. I think the CEO of a company will dictate the vision of the business and to what extent they really want to be reporting on these things. If there's a general counsel that's pushing hard on keeping quiet about, you know, disclosing all of this stuff. So that, and, you know, if it's a private or public company, investors, PE owned, if it's operating in Europe. So that's influencing a lot. I mean, I will say in the last 2-3 years, we've definitely been approached on more ESG reporting roles. So that's a director of ESG reporting sitting in the sustainability team who will be gathering and processing data and reflecting on the data as well from a strategic point of view. Often these businesses don't just want someone who's crunching numbers, but someone who understands enough about sustainability to then reflect that back to the business. So that's from the financial reporting sort of point of view, that's the kind of roles that we'll see being hired. And then if you want to talk about really current, you know, hiring that's going on right now, I think I'm hearing job titles like, well, there's the ESG controller, which we can talk about maybe a little bit later, but a climate controller, I've heard, a climate accountant, climate analyst, sustainability data scientist. So there's a lot more of these roles that are coming in that are much more focused on the data and on the science and on the sort of accounting. And many of these roles could be sitting in the finance team as well. And there's some logic behind that, particularly at that level, let's say.
Where are those people coming from? Are they coming? They're not coming out of accounting schools, are they? Where are you recruiting? Where is their education coming from?
It's a really good question. A lot of them are coming perhaps more from the, I wouldn't even talk about education as much as the sort of kind of workspace they're coming from. A lot of them coming from sustainability consultancies that are specialists in producing these types of reports for their clients. And so there's a niche of talent that, you know, has been already for some time now producing these reports and analyzing, crunching the data. in a business that is already orchestrated around sustainability. So they have the exposure to some of these key issues. I think we are still looking for people who are senior enough to have had enough work experience to be dangerous, if you like. So
right.
We personally don't work much with grads as a business, which is where my knowledge is going to be a bit scant. But certainly in terms of kind of individuals our clients want, they're looking for not just pure account. I think coming from accounting only will mean these individuals are lacking a really key skill set around understanding sustainability and the nuances and the implications. Because like I say, we want people not just to crunch the data, but to also reflect on it and understand the implications and how to inform the wider business strategy as a result.
Right. Let me ask you, if this comes to mind, you know, obviously from what you described, you know, a lot of the recruiting for these roles in industry is coming from the consulting side. But there's also like, and there's, you know, there's that sort of transition. But there's also the transition of, you know, these, if I understand correctly, a lot of these people are going directly into the finance roles and in accounting role. How is that? Is that a cultural shift, you know, to come from a very different perspective, like a background in sustainability, then go into the very rote and regulated format of a financial reporting and accounting position?
Yeah, spot on. I mean, it is a culture shift. And I think, you know, I think businesses have been playing with this idea for a long time. I feel like I had this conversation about 8 years ago with a senior sustainability person about, you know, whether there was a possibility of working within an investor relations team, because even back then there was syndications that the work that's being done by sustainability leaders needs to be translated and communicated to the investor relations team and the investors, and there needed to be more collaboration. And I've spoken to people who've tried to make that sort of work back in the day.
Right.
And it either putting an investment lead into the sustainability team was tough, in as much as they, like you say, coming from a very different world culture approach, was tough. And similarly, putting a sustainability person into a team of effectively financial controllers in finance has been hard too.
Right.
But we are seeing more, I suppose, over time that the role is mutating. It's definitely changing and shifting as we're getting more caught up in legislation and mandatory reporting and assurance. So over time, there's been a transition into a role that feels almost more audit heavy.
Right.
And that's where culturally I can see it might be a lot easier to make that shift now than it might have been, say, five years ago. But the mindset's different, and I think it's worth commenting on that as well, just that, you know, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but from as a financial controller, it is about numbers, and it's about hard numbers and hard data that's accurate and robust.
Right.
There's rigor, and there's a need for real certitude around those numbers. That's how the finance function operates. When it comes to sustainability, especially conversations around emissions, that can feel quite uncomfortable for a lot of financial leaders, because there is, the data is not hard data.
Right.
While the audits and the form of the audits are very similar, they're very numbers based in both cases, the actual data you're collecting is not always that hard. It's it will change and shift constantly. You know, a business emissions will go up and down depending on, you know, how well they're performing financially, but also the way you measure emissions is not actually an exact science yet either.
Right.
And there's all sorts of nuances around that you have to be comfortable with, and that, you know, a lot of sustainability practitioners have to be comfortable with these nuances because it's the nature of what they do. So I think culturally, that can be a bit of a challenge to make those marry.
So, you know, you mentioned it before, the role and what we're seeing as far as a role as a sustainability controller. Is that their position to sort of manage that sort of uncertainty and translate that into the way things are done in the financial side? And is that something that is a growing role in corporate America?
Yeah, there's, and you might also be referring to that the Wall Street article came out. We can talk about it as well in a second. But the ESG controller, there's lots of chatter about the ESG controller becoming a thing. But if you search on LinkedIn for an ESG controller by that exact job title, there's 145 globally at the moment, and there's 24 in the USA. And those individuals, if you look at the kind of organizations, they belong to it, Citibank, Wells Fargo, Honeywell, Autodesk, and globally it's Deloitte, EY, PwC, and KPMG. So I think it's quite interesting that for now the ESG controller, as we're calling it, is sitting more perhaps in the service providers, the accounting world, than it might be in a business with very complex supply chains, like, you know, some of the companies that we work with. So it's almost too early to say. There's a lot of chatter about it, but in terms of the actual role being a thing, we're definitely not there yet. I think there's there is a shift. There's lots of shifts. There's a shift from voluntary disclosure to mandatory compliance. And so it makes sense that these some of these parts of these functions are shifting into a legal or a financial sort of controller home. And I think the importance of marrying the data with financial reporting means there needs to be much more proximity between those two departments. And I hear a lot of people talking about partnership with finance. So a lot of my clients will say, we've thought about an ESG controller. Right now, what we're doing right now is working for us. We work in close partnership with finance. But when it comes down to the role itself, if you go strip it back to what a sustainability leader does, a lot of that is about not just financial reporting. It's about innovation and impact and communications and working across the entire business around the brand and how sustainability initiatives might impact the brand or vice versa. Procurement and supply chain, marketing, operations, design, strategy, commercial. So I think the thing about sustainability, the chief sustainability officer in the traditional sense, is that they have been tasked to come up with a far-reaching strategy, not just on emissions, but on human rights and plastic and waste. And part of their role does and should belong, I think, in finance or legal when it comes to the reporting piece. But when it comes to being a strategic lead that holds the whole program together, I still think there's an argument for having a separate chief sustainability officer that isn't being fully sort of focused on the finance and the audit, because that's taking a lot out of what the business needs this person to be doing in order to not just report on emissions, but enable them to be more financially competitive and innovative and, you know, sort of striking out and helping them to achieve their targets and their carbon reduction targets as well. So,
Do you feel there's a sort of a benchmark or hurdle where, to do these sort of things, to put a chief sustainability officer in place, to put a ESG controller in place, where it makes sense and it doesn't make sense, whether that is like by market cap or by public or private, or can you really define it that way?
It's an annoying answer, but it really does depend on the business, I think, because there's the legacy of the business as well. So you might find that it's just always reported into the CEO because the CEO is passionate about sustainability and wants to be really close to what's going on. In some businesses, it reports into communications because they feel like they've done a lot of the assurance, compliance, foundational work, and now they want this person to be talking about it more. And so there's more of an outward-facing engagement with their customers about what they're doing. Some companies see the role as being intrinsically linked to their commercial goals and strategy, and so it's reporting into the chief strategy officer. For some companies, particularly maybe in heavy industries where there's big issues around emissions, makes more sense to have it reporting to the general counsel maybe, because people are worried about compliance and assurance and legislation and all the regulation that's coming out. Then it makes sense to have it sitting in with them. So, you know, every single business, depending on the nature of what they do, their size, the legacy, like I say, the pressure that's on them. If they're operating in Europe, they're going to be worrying a lot about CSRD and the SDDD right now. Yeah, it does depend.
Well, you mentioned the Wall Street Journal article, and just for people listening, that it was a couple weeks ago, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal essentially saying that the ESG hiring boom is over, and that you know, because of, you know, whether it's regulatory changes or investor changes or however we want to phrase it, the number of people being hired in to ESG is not as robust as it has been. And in talking to you, it doesn't, in what you said so far, it doesn't really seem to be that way. Or how would you describe, is there a retrenchment going on right now in terms of hiring?
There is, but there is across the board. I think what that article didn't say, it focused in on ESG, but what it sort of failed to say was that there's retrenchment across the board. Businesses are now course correcting after a very busy period during COVID where they were over hiring. And so a lot of them are now having to rethink. It's a tough economy, which does affect everything. But if as a business, we're a barometer of the marketplace, while things are maybe tougher than they were 18 months ago, we're still outperforming other recruiters in other market segments, which is quite, I think, an interesting indication as to where ESG or sustainability is going. And it's cyclical as well. So as inflation continues to go down, so more and more people are going to be going out, you know, to the shops and to the high street. And that's where we're going to see these businesses holding off. Because right now, you know, they are having to freeze on hiring or think carefully about where they hire, tightening their belt. And it's just a normal part of current business inflection that is interesting for us, because in the US in particular, you know, some sectors are really buoyant, particularly as a result of the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. And so for our business, that's probably one of the strongest part of what we're doing around the renewables, climate tech work. So like I say, it is cyclical. We're seeing private equity firms and investors now coming back online, and the ESG backlash has been a thing. Interestingly, talking to a food retailer recently, they were saying, you know, they're tightening their belts, but they certainly are not looking to lose their sustainability team, because they know when spending increases, those are the individuals they're going to need more than ever. So they're doing whatever they can to hold on to them. But in terms of reporting, particularly in the South, they're not necessarily calling it an ESG reporting function or talking too much about it because of the backlash. So it's not gone away. It's just maybe being renamed or called something else.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I have a sort of a follow-up to that. And it, you know, goes into, you know, regulatory matters, although I want to go deep into the technical aspects of regulatory matters. But there was a decision, a long-awaited decision, especially for our listeners and our membership, around from the SEC on financial reporting and sustainability, ESG and scope 3 and carbon accounting. And they seem to have sort of like dialed it back a little bit in a way. Do those sort of changes make a big difference in the recruiting patterns you're seeing, or are they sort of separate from what you're dealing with?
I haven't seen a big difference, if I'm honest. Again, a lot of the businesses that we work with haven't changed a thing as a result of the SEC decision. They've made some really public goals and claims that they want to stick to, and so they're going to have to keep going and reporting on Scope 3. And for most businesses, the majority of their emissions sit in Scope 3. So for all that the SEC has made this decision, it hasn't deterred or changed many businesses, you know,
right,
point of view or trajectory. I think it's important not to forget that it's not actually just about the SEC. We've got California legislation last year, which does still include Scope 3. And while it's further out in terms of timeline, the CSDDD and CSRD, for any business that's got any value chain in Europe, is going to be having to think about these emissions too. And we're talking a lot about emissions, but it's not. It's important to remember that ESG also stands for S for social, and that's often a piece that's sort of right, not discussed. But this legislation that's coming out of Europe in particular, I think, is going to hit a lot of businesses quite hard because they haven't even begun thinking about their supply chains in terms of forced labor, for example. So this new legislation going into effect in Canada, the Uyghur First Forced Labor Prevention Act, there's the New York Fashion Act. I think there's other bits of sort of legislation coming out of New York, and you're seeing some businesses' shipments being stopped at customs because they have no transparency or reporting around where this stuff has come from, and they can't prove that it's not come from, you know, some factory in Zhanjiang or where there's forced labor, you know, going on. So that's going to be, I think, the next hot potato. And a lot of businesses that just haven't even begun to think about these things. I think there's back to the carbon piece, there's a tracker, I think it's called the Net Zero Carbon or Net Carbon Tracker or something, forgive me. Mm-hmm. But they've looked at 2,000 Fortune 500, I think, and global companies over a certain revenue figure, and 47% of them don't even have, in the US, don't have a plan whatsoever in terms of carbon reduction. So something else the Wall Street Journal, I think, was saying was, you know, maybe just all the teams are full.
Right.
And, you know, maybe everyone's just stopped hiring because they've just filled their teams and that's that. But it's just not how it works. There's a lot more businesses that haven't even come online yet. And people move as well.
Right. Well, given that, I want to, you know, just give an idea to people who are listening. Like, given from what you're seeing and what the market, you know, the what's happening, you know, in terms of carbon reporting right now, but what's going to be needed in terms of sourcing and supply chain and sustainable issues around that and reporting around that. What are the skills that are most demanded right now in sustainability reporting? And how do you think they'll change over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think, I was sort of saying it again, but it does depend who you ask or which company that you ask in terms of where they're at on their journey. So at a very base level, I think quite simply, particularly for companies that are starting off, they just need someone who is an overarching sustainability lead with probably enough experience or, you know, the scars to prove that they've devised and run and implemented a program within a large enough business so that they know what to look for and how to anticipate the challenges and the roadblocks. So for companies early on in the journey, quite simply, a sustainability leader who has got an understanding of the environmental and the social issues and can pull together a wide-reaching strategy. And then to implement the strategy, which is the piece that is absolutely key, then they're looking for individuals who are hands-on project managers. But what's also key is just relationship building and engagement, because for all of these roles, it's about winning friends and influencing people and having all the business leads work with you and support you in gathering what you need to gather and crunching that data and meeting KPIs, et cetera. So at the most base level, that's what I would say the skills are. But then if it's a business that is quite far advanced down the road, you know, they might be thinking about innovating. They've got the compliance piece out of the way, and now they're in a position where they can start really the blue sky thinking of what can we do with sustainability, where that will give us the competitive edge.
Right.
And then they'll be looking for people who are technical experts, who understand alternative materials and life cycle analysis, for example. So they're going to be working with new materials that are sustainable, but they've got to make sure that the attributes of those material stand up to scrutiny. And so they're looking for technical life cycle analysis people. Businesses with big supply chains, like I say, human rights, I think that's a really often overlooked skill set that companies increasingly need as well, where they understand what to look for when it comes to child labor, forced labor, and all those things, and which types of auditors to work with on the ground that they can trust in terms of the rigor around the audits as well. And yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned earlier about sort of these data scientists and I think there's going to be an increasing need for people who can use AI, for example, to help companies visualize and understand what their footprint is and how to tackle some of these issues in a much more efficient way. So I definitely think the way things are moving and the way reporting is going, where there's much more integration, you're going to find there's a need to simplify, like I say, using AI to help really problem solve and highlight where the company needs to go in a really clear and quite straightforward way is coming to.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, and this is sort of my final question, and sort of existential question, but you know, it seems to me like just, you know, one of the things we're focused on and we see a lot, there's something called an accounting pipeline issue going on right now, or a talent pipeline issue in accounting, where there's not enough people going into the accounting, you know, higher education to produce people to do the work. And it seems a lot of what you're describing is not necessarily applicable to that sort of education, that those skills. So I guess my question is, like, you know, if you're hiring into, you know, ESG or sustainability in a financial reporting position right now, do you even consider an accounting person or a degree? How is the talent crisis in accounting impacting, you know, ESG in particular, or if at all?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think it's impacting it too much right now. I think we've almost got the opposite problem. I think sustainability has never been more popular. Mm-hmm. And so maybe all those accounting types have moved into the sustainability courses, because there's just an overwhelming number of grads now coming out who are interested in and passionate about doing something impactful with their careers and see this as a really exciting journey. So a lot of these courses do teach quant skills. And so you'll find these people coming out with, I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, certified accountants, but they certainly will have a modicum of sort of right. understanding around how, you know, what the skill set is that's required. Question is, philosophically, do you want someone who's a great accountant who has an understanding of sustainability? It's what you want these people for as well, because if it's purely just reporting and they're going to be sitting crunching numbers at a computer, then how important is sustainability really to you?
Right.
But I would, on the flip side, you've got sustainability experts who understand the nuances, like I said earlier, and all the sort of moving parts and the key drivers, who also happen to be good at crunching numbers. they're the type of people that I would want on my team in terms of being able to not only interpret what they're seeing, but also engage with the rest of the business, because being a good sustainability person means being outward facing, engaging, like I say, relationship building, and applying your sustainability expertise to the various commercial situations you're seeing, and helping to create a narrative that makes sense to the head of operations and the head of procurement and the head of design. You know, so you want to be able to meet them all where they're at and help them understand why this is also their, not problem, but their opportunity, and they're part of their journey too. And I think that's quite a niche skill set that's harder to teach someone than maybe accounting, dare I say.
Yeah, so I guess it makes me someone with, a sustainability professional with accounting chops rather than an accounting professional with sustainability chops.
It's more succinctly put, thank you.
No, it makes total sense. Terrific, this was a great conversation. I really want to appreciate you taking the time. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, thanks so much.